Chapter 30. Said to himself with bitter discontent, "Well, well, what is more contemptible than a half-hearted rogue?" That morning the post bag had been brought to Paula and Mrs. Goodman in the usual way, and Miss Power read the letter. His resignation was a surprise. The question whether he would or would not repay the money was passed over. The necessity of installing Somerset after all as sole architect was an agitation, or emotion, the precise nature of which it is impossible to accurately define. However, she went about the house after breakfast with very much the manner of one who had had a weight removed either from her heart or from her conscience. Moreover, her face was a little flushed when, in passing by Somerset's late studio, she saw the plans bearing his motto, and knew that his, and not Havel's, would be the presiding presence in the coming architectural turmoil. She went on further, and called to Charlotte, who was now regularly sleeping in the castle, to accompany her, and together they ascended to the telegraph room in the donjon tower. "Whom are you going to telegraph to?" said Miss Destancy, when they stood by the instrument. "My architect." "Oh, Mr. Havel." "Mr. Somerset." Miss Destancy had schooled her emotions on that side cruelly well, and she asked calmly, "What, have you chosen him after all?" "There is no choice in it, read that," said Paula, handing Havel's letter, as if she felt that Providence had stepped into shape ends, that she was too undecided or unpractised to shape for herself. "It is very strange," murmured Charlotte, while Paula applied herself to the machine and dispatched the words. "Miss Power, Stancy Castle, to G. Somerset Esquire, F.S.A., F. RRIBA, Queen Anne's Chambers, St. James. Your design is accepted in its entirety. It will be necessary to begin soon. I shall wish to see and consult you on the matter about the 10th instant." When the message was fairly gone out of the window, Paula seemed still further to expand. The strange spell cast over her by something or other, probably the presence of Destancy, and the weird romanticism of his manner towards her, which was as if the historic past had touched her with a yet living hand, in a great measure became dissipated, leaving her the arch and serene maiden that as he had been before. About this time Captain Destancy and his achates were approaching the castle, and had arrived about 50 paces from the spot at which it was Dare's custom to drop behind his companion, in order that their appearance at the lodge should be that of master and man. Dare was saying, as he had said before, "I can't help fancying, Captain, that your approach to this castle and its mistress is by a very tedious system. Your trenches, zigzags, counterscarps, and ravelins may be all very well, and a very sure system of attack in the long run, but upon my soul they are almost as slow in maturing as those of Uncle Toby himself. For my part, I should be inclined to try an assault." "Don't pretend to give advice, Willie, on matters beyond your years. I only meant it for your good, and your proper advancement in the world," said Dare in wounded tones. "Different characters, different systems," returned the soldier. "This lady is of a reticent, independent, complicated disposition, and any sudden proceeding would put her on her mettle. You don't dream what my impatience is, my boy. It is a thing transcending your utmost conceptions. But I proceed slowly. I know better than to do otherwise. Thank God there is plenty of time. As long as there is no risk of Somerset's return, my situation is sure. And professional etiquette will prevent him coming yet. Havel and he will change like the men in a sentry box. When Havel walks out, he'll walk in, and not a moment before. That will not be till 18 months have passed. And as the Jesuit said, time and I against any two. Now drop to the rear," added Captain Destancy authoritatively. and they passed under the walls of the castle. The grave fronts and bastions were wrapped in silence, so much so that, standing a while in the inner ward, they could hear through an open window a faintly clicking sound from within. "She's at the telegraph," apostrophe said Dare, throwing forward his voice softly to the captain. "What can that be for so early? That wire is a nuisance, to my mind. Such constant intercourse with the outer world is bad for our romance." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the speaker entered to arrange his photographic apparatus, of which, in truth, he was getting weary, and Distancy smoked on the terrace till Dare should be ready. While he waited, his sister looked out upon him from an upper casement, having caught sight of him as she came from Paula in the telegraph room. "Well, Lottie, what news this morning?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said gaily. "Nothing of importance. We are quite well. Dot, 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 dot," she added with hesitation. "There is one piece of news, Mr. Avil, but perhaps you have heard it in Markton?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing. Apostrophe, 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 Mr. Avil has resigned his appointment as architect to the castle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what? Who has it then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Somerset. Apostrophe, apostrophe, appointed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, by telegraph. Apostrophe, apostrophe, when is he coming? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Distancy in consternation. About the 10th, we think. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Charlotte was concerned to see her brother's face, and withdrew from the window, that he might not question her further. Distancy went into the hall, and onto the gallery, where Dare was standing as still as a caryatid. "I have heard every word," apostrophe said Dare. "Well, what does it mean? Has that fool Avil done it on purpose to annoy me? What conceivable reason can the man have for throwing up an appointment he has worked so hard for, at the moment he has got it, and in the time of his greatest need?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Dare guessed, for he had seen a little way into Avil's soul during the brief period of their confederacy. But he was very far from saying what he guessed. Yet he unconsciously revealed by other words the nocturnal shades in his character which had made that confederacy possible. "Somerset coming after all." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he replied. "By God! That little six-barreled friend of mine, and a good resolution, and he would never arrive." Apostrophe, apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Captain Distancy, paling with horror as he gathered the other's sinister meaning. Dare instantly recollected himself. "One is tempted to say anything at such a moment, apostrophe," he replied hastily. "Since he is to come, let him come, for me," apostrophe continued Distancy, with reactionary distinctness, and still gazing gravely into the young man's face. "The battle shall be fairly fought out. Fair play, even to a rival, remember that, boy. Dot, 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 why are you here? Unnaturally concerning yourself with the passions of a man of my age, as if you were the parent, and I the son? Would to heaven, Willie, you had done as I wished you to do, and led the life of a steady, thoughtful young man. Instead of meddling here, you should now have been in some studio, college, or professional man's chambers, engaged in a useful pursuit which might have made one proud to own you. But you were so precocious and headstrong, and this is what you have come to. You promised to be worthless. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think I shall go to my lodgings today instead of staying here over these pictures," apostrophe said Dare, after a silence during which Captain Distancy endeavored to calm himself. "I was going to tell you that my dinner today will unfortunately be one of herbs, for want of the needful. I have come to my last stiver. You dine at the mess, I suppose, Captain?" Apostrophe, Distancy had walked away, but Dare knew that he played a pretty sure card in that speech. Distancy's heart could not withstand the suggested contrast between a lonely meal of bread and cheese, and a well-ordered dinner amid cheerful companions. "Here, apostrophe," he said, emptying his pocket and returning to the lad's side. Take this, and order yourself a good meal. You keep me as poor as a crow. There shall be more tomorrow. The peculiarly biffle nature of Captain DeStancy, as shown in his conduct at different times, was something rare in life, and perhaps happily so. That mechanical admixture of black and white qualities without coalescence, on which the theory of men's characters was based by moral analysis before the rise of modern ethical schools, fictitious as it was in general application, would have almost hit off the truth as regards Captain DeStancy. Removed to some half-known century, his deeds would have won a picturesqueness of light and shade that might have made him a fascinating subject for some gallery of illustrious historical personages. It was this tendency to moral checker work which accounted for his varied bearings towards Dare. Dare withdrew to take his departure. When he had gone a few steps, despondent, he suddenly turned, and ran back with some excitement. Captain, he's coming on the 10th, don't they say? Well, 4 days before the 10th comes the 6th. Have you forgotten what's fixed for the 6th? I had quite forgotten. That day will be worth 3 months of quiet attentions. With luck, skill, and a bold heart, what mayn't you do? Captain DeStancy's face softened with satisfaction. There is something in that. The game is not up after all. The 6th had gone clean out of my head, by gad. The cheering message from Paula to Somerset sped through the loophole of Stancy Castle Keep, over the trees, along the railway, under bridges, across 4 counties from extreme antiquity of environment to sheer modernism, and finally landed itself on a table in Somerset's chambers in the midst of a cloud of fog. He read it, and, in the moment of reaction from the depression of his past days, clapped his hands like a child. Then he considered the date at which she wanted to see him. Had she so worded her dispatch, he would have gone that very day, but there was nothing to complain of in her giving him a week's notice. Pure maiden modesty might have checked her indulgence in a too ardent recall. Time, however, dragged somewhat heavily along in the interim, and on the second day he thought he would call on his father and tell him of his success in obtaining the appointment. The elder Mr. Somerset lived in a detached house in the northwest part of fashionable London, and ascending the chief staircase the young man branched off from the first landing and entered his father's painting room. It was an hour when he was pretty sure of finding the well-known painter at work, and on lifting the tapestry he was not disappointed, Mr. Somerset being busily engaged with his back towards the door. Art and vitiated nature were struggling like wrestlers in that apartment, and art was getting the worst of it. The overpowering gloom pervading the clammy air, rendered still more intense by the height of the window from the floor, reduced all the pictures that were standing around to the wizened feebleness of corpses on end. The shadowy parts of the room behind the different easels were veiled in a brown vapor, precluding all estimate of the extent of the studio, and only subdued in the foreground by the ruddy glare from an open stove of Dutch tiles. Somerset's footsteps had been so noiseless over the carpeting of the stairs and landing that his father was unaware of his presence. He continued at his work as before, which he performed by the help of a complicated apparatus of lamps, candles, and reflectors, so arranged as to eke out the miserable daylight, to a power apparently sufficient for the neutral touches on which he was at that moment engaged. The first thought of an unsophisticated stranger on entering that room could only be the amazed inquiry, why a professor of the art of color, which beyond all other arts requires pure daylight for its exercise, should fix himself on the single square league in habitable Europe to which light is denied at noonday for weeks in succession. Oh, it's you, George, is it? Said the academician, turning from the lamps, which shone over his bald crown at such a slant as to reveal every cranial irregularity. How are you this morning? Still a dead silence about your grand castle competition? Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset told the news. His father duly congratulated him, and added genially, "It is well to be you, George. One large commission to attend to, and nothing to distract you from it. I am bothered by having a dozen irons in the fire at once. And people are so unreasonable. Only this morning, among other things, when you got your order to go on with your single study, I received a letter from a woman, an old friend whom I can scarcely refuse, begging me as a great favor to design her a set of theatrical costumes, in which she and her friends can perform for some charity. It would occupy me a Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.